All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Chris Christopherson with his original version of his song Me and Bobby McGee, which later became a number one hit for Janis Joplin. Chris Christopherson, one of the more interesting American lives of our times, probably, passed away over the weekend.
And then we had the news that Dikembe Mutombo has passed away. That is just breaking. Age 58. I didn't know he had brain cancer. He died of brain cancer. Four-time Defensive Player of the Year, eight-time All-Star, three-time All-NBA, six-time All-Defense, second all-time in blocks, third all-time in blocks per game. Your thoughts on Dikembe Mutombo?
One of the great, defensive players of his era, great rim protector. Colorful figure, like everyone remembers, and many have emulated the wagging finger after the block. Someone who was involved in a lot of major stuff off the court back in Africa in particular. And so I think anyone who followed the NBA during that era has warm feelings for Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, hard not to. All right, Chris. It is media day. I presume you're on your way or will be shortly. It starts at 11, I guess, Zach Kleiman talks. Before I get to that, though, there was a trade over the weekend, a bombshell of a trade, as Karl Anthony Towns goes to the Knicks for a package, included Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, and a first-round pick. Your thoughts on that deal?
It's a fascinating trade. I mean, unexpected. The idea of either of those main players, Towns and Randle, being dealt is something that's been hovering around, for years at this point, frankly. But there was no inkling that anything was about to happen on that. There have been no active rumors. And it's on the eve of the season. And it's particularly fascinating because it's two teams that are both considered, I think, likely top three teams in their conferences or were before the trade, and maybe still are. And so I think it's a really interesting trade. I think the more I thought about it, after a beat or two, I can see the rationale. There's always a rationale because these people are spending a lot of time on these decisions. So you can there's definitely a rationale for both deals, but there's a lot of risk involved because those teams were both already really, really good, and so you're taking a chance messing with something that was already near in the contending circle of your respective conferences.
I was talking to my son Peter about it. He was in town. We went to Bain's yesterday for lunch. And he said part of the problem is just Karl Anthony Towns himself is such a hard evaluation. Like, he's a
But that's also true of Julius Randle.
He just dismissed Julius Randle. But yes, but Karl Anthony Towns can be, there are times you think he's legitimately great, right? Like,
right.
And then there's other times he's just not. He's just not at all. So, and obviously it thins out. But on DiVincenzo is the same thing. Like, last year he was Klay Thompson, essentially. But before that he wasn't, right?
Yeah, but before that he was still really good. He was not the flamethrower shooter, but I'm a big DiVincenzo guy. And that's someone a few years ago I wrote about. As I think it may have been the same summer the Grizzlies re-signed Tyus Jones instead of losing him at free agency. But I wrote about Dante DiVincenzo that summer as a free agent target the Grizzlies should consider, upside on Golden State.
Right.
I think DiVincenzo unequivocally is a meaningful loss for the Knicks and a meaningful addition for the Wolves.
Well, and then you have, with the Wolves, you've got Anthony Edwards, you've got Jaden McDaniels, you've got Nikhil Alexander-Walker, you've got Naz Reid, you've got, it's a pretty fierce lineup of guys who can guard you. Now the shooting's a little, they need DiVincenzo's shooting. But I don't know. I guess you're assuming they'll let Randle walk after this year. Is that what you're assuming?
Well, maybe, but this year matters.
Right.
To me, it's the more pertinent thing is not what happens after this year. It's what happens this year for Minnesota. That is a team, from a talent standpoint, the back half of that roster is pretty shaky. But doing this 2-for-1, they're now up to 8, and 8's what you need in the playoffs if they're healthy. Their top 8 talent wise, this is good, maybe as good as anybody in the league. The question is, does Randall fit? It's one thing to look at just talent on a sheet of paper, but does it fit? And I think that's a really, I don't know the answer to that for Minnesota. On one hand, like other than Edwards, they don't really have, I mean, they don't have guys who are like going to do a lot with the ball necessarily. So there's room for more usage and more shot creation on that team. But Randall and Gobert playing together, I don't know if that works. I think there's a lot of questions there in terms of fit. But the upside, if it does fit, I mean, to have those eight guys is pretty strong. From the Knicks perspective, I was looking, I was digging into some of the Minnesota numbers. I was sort of glancing over all the teams this weekend. Yep. I didn't get through all of them, but I was sort of going team by team, trying to think about it a little bit. In the Minnesota stuff, if you look at last season, and obviously last season is one season, but in the second season with Gobert in town, so they had a year to sort of figure it out. And if you look in the regular season, their offense, when it was Edwards and Gobert but not Towns, sort of fell off a cliff. Like, Towns was essential to making, it was great. When they played the three of them together, it was great. And when you took Towns away, it was just Edwards-Gobert lineups, the offense fell off a cliff. Well, then when you put it in the playoffs, that was not the story. It was actually, the offense was fine without Towns in the playoffs, and what totally failed in the playoffs is when Towns was on the floor without Gobert, when Towns was playing center, basically. Like, they got roasted when Towns playing center. And so, like, you know, do you trust the bigger sample size or the smaller, more important sample size? I don't know what the answer to that question is. But the idea that they got roasted in playoff basketball when they tried to play Towns as the only big, that would give me pause if I'm New York, because you're forced basically in a situation where you're going to be playing Towns as the only big in your main lineups. And it's not, you can say, like, you have Bridges and Ananobi, so there's a lot of defense around them. Well, Minnesota had Anthony Edwards and Jalen McDaniels, like Jade McDaniels, sort of the same thing. I think the offensive upside is immense in New York, but the injury concern, the depth concern, and the can you defend in the playoffs with that lineup with Towns at center, it's the only big on the floor, are big questions.
In the end, the Knicks, quote unquote, needed a center, you know, but did they need this? Did they need this kind of center? And you do wonder what Thibodeau's role in all of this is, because he had Karl Anthony Towns in Minnesota, and he is not.
I don't know if I like Randall on that team on either end of the floor.
Right.
At least I like Towns on offense for that team.
Yeah, I guess so, there's that.
You know, there is that.
All right. Well, so from a Grizzlies perspective, looking at the West, is your best guess that this year makes Minnesota better or worse?
I don't know. I just don't know how the Randall thing fits.
Right.
I think it makes Minnesota. I think it adds more downside, because we knew they were really good before the trade. Like that was established. That at least the regular season basketball, that what they had worked. It was known. It is not known. And so I think this move expands the range of possible for Minnesota in both directions. I do think adding DiVincenzo is really important, because they're not going to have to rely as much on rookies, you know, Rob Dillingham and Terrence Shannon.
Right.
You know, Mike Conley's 37. It gives them a lot more flexibility with their lineups and a lot more ability to withstand some injuries on the perimeter. And then, you know, obviously you can play Naz Reid. It may be their best lineup, so it'd have Julius Randle in them. But, they're going to have to play Randle, and either that's going to work or it's not. And if it works, Minnesota could win the title. If it doesn't work, they could take a step back.
I do think, you know, we always wondered with Minnesota, they're gonna have to blow it up at some point. They've blown it up though, and it was a reason to not worry about them too much going into the future, because they're gonna have to blow this thing up. They did it in a way that is pretty elegant, really, in some ways, right? I mean, and going forward in this day and age, without Julius Randle, it's still a pretty formidable core if they don't have Julius Randle. I think
so. The financial angle for Minnesota's end is extremely important to the deal, and I think there's sort of two ways to look at that. In terms of like the short term, like in terms of thinking about what matters for this season, if Karl Anthony Towns had Julius Randle's contract, I think that trade would not have happened.
Right.
And so that tells you there may have been some basketball stuff there. I think adding DiVincenzo is going to help them immensely, like I said. But if the financial aspect weren't there to it, they would they would not have done the deal.
Right.
And I think that does tell you something about the deal from a basketball perspective this season. Now, they were facing, and are still facing, but facing like enormous luxury tax issues in what is a mid-sized NBA market. And I think what this deal boiled down to is an opportunity arose, however it came about. The opportunity was in front of them to get off of that Towns contract in a manner that gave them the chance to be as good right. in doing the deal. And I think that opportunity, you could not have predicted it would be there, and you could not know it would ever be there again. And I think given the chance to fix their financial situation from their perspective and have a chance to not take a step back was something they just could not pass up.
The draft pick, by the way, is protected protections for the next 3 years, but it's a Pistons pick, protected for the next 3 years. After that, it turns into a second. It could very easily turn into a second.
I think DiVincenzo is a much more important part of this trade than the draft pick. Yeah.
All right, so that was fascinating. Then we had, after we went off the air Friday, we had the dispiriting news about Vince Williams Jr. Tibia, right? It's a tibia. How long do we expect him to miss the start of the season now? Yes?
Yeah, I mean, they said to reevaluate in a month, and so I don't. Even if like, you know, he's cleared to ramp up or whatever a month from now, I don't think he's going to be in the lineup on opening night. I mean, I think the hope would be, and maybe we'll learn a little bit more about this, although I doubt it today. I mean, the hope would be that, you know, you're measuring his absence in a matter of weeks, that it's less than a month, right? That it's maybe this is the first couple of weeks of the season. If it's only that, it's not that big of a deal. The problem for the Grizzlies is not the two injuries they have had. Because they both came to players who were probably going to be off the bench, and they're not like out for the season kind of injuries. So Gigi Jackson and Vince Williams, and injuries are just going to happen. The problem is that you can't sustain too many more, right? And so the more you have, the more each one is going to matter beyond that. And so like if the players who are currently not injured all stay healthy, like, you know, for the first month of the season, I don't think it's going to matter that much. But it limits how much you can withstand as you keep going forward, especially since they're like opening at the moment. They get two open roster spots, and so if you have two open roster spots and two guys who can't play, well, you're down to 11 on a main roster, and so it can get tricky. And so I would certainly be nervous about having any other issues, you know, in the near future.
What's interesting is you said that about Gigi Jackson when he got hurt. You said this, it's not this injury. Now we're seeing it come to pass. Even before the season starts, we have another
one. Yeah, I mean, matter a little bit more, but it's still not like in a breaking point. Yeah. Two bench guys is not like a breaking point situation.
On the other hand, you've gone from a surfeit of wings to a scarcity of wings. Right now, what do you imagine the wing rotation will be, Chris?
Marcus Smart, I think pretty clearly, I think everyone is going to assume Marcus Smart starts. I think that's probably right. You know, obviously, Luke Kennard is like your top perimeter guy off the bench.
Right.
And I think when the Gigi Jackson injury happened, the people were looking at Scottie Pippen Jr., Jake LaRavia, John Conchar. So you got those three options for this one open roster spot. And then you got those three options for these two open roster spots. You know, maybe Jalen Wells or Cam Spencer forces their way into the mix, but I'm not assuming that. I'm assuming you're looking at Scottie Pippen, Jake LaRavia, John Conchar. And I think my instinct would be Scottie Pippen and Jake LaRavia both open the season if you're going 10 deep, both open the season in the rotation. And Conchar is your sort of like emergency, he's your fill-in guy. He's your sort of your safety blanket. Because you know he can play. He can play for either of those guys. And if he's the fifth best player in the lineup, you're fine. Like, and people don't like Conchar, not excited about him. But the history has shown that if he's on the floor with other good players, he can soak up minutes and it's okay.
I guess the thought was you might not use Scottie Pippen as your backup point guard because you have to steal minutes for other folks, for all these wings you have some of them play.
Oh, yeah, the opportunity is there for him to be playing 15, 20 minutes every single night.
Yeah.
If he earns it, absolutely.
It's certainly the worm has turned for Jake LaRavia, hasn't it? Which we so you've sort of said too. Like he obviously had a good end of the season, and. And now there is a real opportunity for him.
Yeah. there's opportunity, but he still has to seize it right now, because, like, if he's not playing well, they're just like Anjar. You know, right. they don't have to play Jake Arabia still.
Do you lament?
There's certainly an opportunity for him.
Do you lament the departure of Zaire Williams?
Well, a little bit, especially after the Derrick Rose thing happened. Because the main, I mean, there's more than one thing. I think they have a history of not wanting to keep guys around once they've lost interest in them. And I think that's probably productive for the player and for the team ultimately, you know, look at the David Roddy thing. But I do think, I mean, one of the reasons you did that move was to give you more breathing room under the luxury tax to re-sign Luke Kennard. And at the time, you thought you were going to have $3.5 million of Derrick Rose on your books. If the Derrick Rose thing happens before that, maybe they don't do that deal. Maybe you still have Zaire on the roster for depth, and that's a tradable contract. That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to, but I do think the calculus would be different if the Derrick Rose thing had happened before then.
All right, so you're headed to Media Day. Are there things we actually could learn that we might expect? Here's one. Whether we're going to get more clarity on Vince Williams, we probably will not. Any other immediate questions that leap to mind that can be answered in a straightforward fashion?
It's always injury stuff. There's nothing as mysterious as the Steven Adams thing. That was real news that came out of Media Day a year ago, was the different answers different people gave about Steven Adams' readiness. That was meaningful stuff at a Media Day. I don't see anything right now that is as close to the surface in terms of something meaningful that's going to come. Maybe something surprising will happen. I mean, the most important answers are going to happen on the floor, not in a news conference. And so I don't have anything that's like an obvious, you know, like this is something we need to learn that we don't know. We'll ask about whatever, but I don't see anything on the level of Steven Adams' readiness going into the... Oh, and frankly, also on Media Day a year ago, we didn't quite know. I think we found out right before Media Day, like, what John Morant's status was in terms of could he practice with the team, could he travel with the team. That was also news that came out. There's nothing that leaps out this year that seems as newsy or likely to be as newsy. So it's going to be more of a, like, you know, guys are going to get up there and talk, and they'll say funny stuff or whatever, and we'll try to glean something out.
There's some conspiracy theories floating out there around Marcus Smart. Chris, I don't know if you've seen these on social media, but they are.
I don't see stuff on social media much anymore.
That's your wise man. I was only someone to. Well, he blew off the. We didn't have him in the end of the season press conference.
That's true.
He's not been promoted. There's no smartphone holder or whatever else. He's not involved in their promotions. And I don't follow this stuff. And he's not really been playing with the other guys, it doesn't feel like, you know, whatever else. So is Marcus Smart either taking himself out of the mix, or are the Grizzlies downplaying him, or is this just get off Jeff, spend less time on Twitter?
I don't know that the basketball ops and the marketing people are that granular about, like, you know, the promotion stuff. I'm not saying, I mean, there are some situations where that might happen. But I don't think in this instance I would read much into that. I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. Marcus Smart only played 20 games last season. It's kind of a weird situation for him where he leaves Boston and they win a title.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you. I have no reason to believe those conspiracy theories, but I don't have any knowledge to counteract them either.
No, I actually do, though, in terms of just the general tenor of who's going to talk. Like, last year you had Derrick Rose and you weren't particularly interested in that, but, like, that was a conversation that people wanted to hear, whatever. I'm kind of interested in just hearing from Marcus Smart. I remember the first press conference he gave was terrific. The first time he talked, whatever. I sort of think I know what Jaren will be like, and I think I know what Dez will be like. Dez, of course, just got married over the summer and all of that, and Ja's got his new shoes, and he's got the new mural, very impressive mural. I'm just kind of interested in his affect, I guess. Marcus Smart, and then we get Zach Edey too. Like, that'll be fun,
right? And we'll get, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of chirping already in other places about guys excited, and I've heard this too, that Zach Edey's look really good in some of their summer stuff.
Oh no, Chris.
Get excited about Zach Edey. I think there'll be more material to get you excited about Zach Edey coming out today.
Yeah, what do you did you put stock in the people are excited about Zach Edey? You're excited about Zach Edey as a prospect, the idea of what he could be when they've been playing with him. What do you attach to that?
But all the cards are in. I'm very confused.
Go ahead. I'll talk. You know what? Just collect some good stuff, and we'll talk to you about it tomorrow. Thank you, Chris.
All right.
Chris, focus on you. Don't die. Don't die. We want enough of that. So there you go. What are you interested in, Jeffrey? I mean, these are all just whatever. You know, they're the truth of the matter is it tends to be a long day. You sit there waiting for people to come in and whatever else. And then here's what I fill up my tape recorder with – you know, all these interviews, and then I never go back and listen to them again.
Yeah.
There might be a, what did Dez say at minute 12? You know, I'll go back and try to pluck that out or something else to try to, themes will emerge and whatnot.
I mean, you do have me vaguely interested. What's Marcus Smart going to say?
I've now intrigued you with the conspiracy theory. I've intrigued you.
I don't even know if this is I don't know if we put it together as a theory yet. It just seems like these are details.
Well, in order for a good conspiracy theory or questions, you've got to take details and then connect them.
Correct.
And then connect them and then raise a question mark.
Hmm. I wonder.
I wonder. Exactly. That's sort of how it goes. All right. This year, FanDuel is giving you a chance to win big every Thursday with FanDuel Squares. Every Thursday night, it's the same Super Bowl Squares game you've always known, only way better. That's because your numbers aren't just randomly assigned. You get to pick them yourself. Pick as many as you like, get to see the odds beforehand, and you can bet them live during the game. So what are you waiting for? Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, and bet on Squares. Plus, if you're new to FanDuel, get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only, $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Here we are, 24th year of the Grizzlies in Memphis, 24th Media Day. Jeffrey, what's most interesting?
I think, right, new toy, right, Zach Edey in general.
I think there are two fun stories, honestly. One is more hoped for, but they're both kind of hoped for. It's the vengeance of the Grizzlies. You know, it's the Grizzlies are back. And it's, you know, you see that I really do love the Nike mural floating through the clouds. It's a stunning mural. And you're just reminded, you saw him against New Orleans, what he did last year when he came back. And it's not like they weren't scrappy and fun and all that stuff when they won a game without Ja, but Ja is the most fun watch in the league. Maybe Steph. Steph is fun to watch because you see a guy hitting 40 footers and you're watching Steph, like one of the greatest ever. I don't think LeBron is that fun to watch, but whatever. He certainly was great in the Olympics. He's an all-time great, no question.
I think he's a great in-person watch.
Maybe
on television it's not, but in person when you can see the whole floor and what he sees.
Beyond that, who's a better watch than Ja?
I mean, he. There's always the idea of you could go to a game to see Ja Morant and see something you can't believe.
It's just, you have to. It's the Elliot Perry, you know. It's the Elliot Perry. Oh,
yes,
like that. And it's back. Hopefully, you know, God willing, please stay healthy, everybody. The rest of you,
yes,
the rest of you, stay healthy. It is funny. Remember when they shut down Zach Edey so he wouldn't get hurt? Or people wanted Zach Edey shut down so he wouldn't get hurt. Then he did get hurt, but they wanted him shut down so he wouldn't get hurt. And my point then was, these people play basketball.
Yeah,
and sure enough, Gigi and Vince both hurt.
Yes,
because they play basketball.
Correct.
You know, but I am really anxious to see everyone reminded how awesome Ja is, how awesome this team can be. And I don't mind the ESPN power rankings that had him at future power rankings that had him at 12 or whatever. But to me, it's just a reminder that, you know, it's for all of them. Whether they had Zach Kleiman in the front office down at 17th or something, man, I don't know what it was. Like, it's just the whole thing. I want revenge for last year. And honestly, for all the season ticket holders who trooped down to that arena for crappy game after crappy game after crappy game, you know, I want it for them. It'll be, hopefully it's going to be fun again. And so that, to me, like, the gang is back together, and right now, anyway, Ja's healthy, Jaren's healthy, Dez is healthy, we think Marcus Smart is healthy. So there's all that. That's big picture the story that I'm really looking forward to. I think you're right. The fun part of this is Zach Edey. It's not just because he's a new toy, because if Zach Edey were, you know, Cody Williams, we wouldn't feel this way.
Right.
He's a new toy that's unlike anyone else's new toy. He is in many ways the betting favorite to be Rookie of the Year. And he is being counted on. He is being absolutely counted on in a way that the first pick in the draft is not being counted on, or the second pick of the draft is not being counted on. Zach Edey's got to step in on a contender and be the starting center and play this role. He's got to be a different version of Steven Adams. But he's just fun. Like, he's not, he doesn't say stuff that's so fun, right? Whatever. But just when you have someone who is that big, he was a phenomenon to watch at Purdue all those years. Like, just watching him was remarkable. And then to see what he will do when he doesn't have to be the center, the center of things, when he doesn't have to be the focus, he can just be the fifth guy on that team. My God.
Well, there's definitely an attraction element.
I mean, you saw it from the first night when Ja's putting memes on the night of the draft. Like, there's just you can't look away, right? You can't look away. It's all the summer league games were more fun when the summer league games were fun when he was in there. They weren't so much fun when he wasn't in there. Like, it's just, a guy is that massive. It's, you can now, if you look at the history of rookie centers lately, there's not a lot who come in and have a massive impact. There's one in Dallas last year who was very good in a sort of secondary role.
Yeah.
Not unlike this one. But I think that is the other thing that's, you're exactly right. It's, to me, it's wreaking havoc on the rest of the league, reminding yourself who you are and that you haven't gone away. And then it's the new toy in Zach Edey. It would be Gigi. Like, he was a smile too. Like, if you're thinking about things that make you smile, like, I'm sorry that Gigi's not going to be a part of this for a while, and Vince isn't going to be part of this for a while. That is a bummer. And if you say it doesn't resonate, it absolutely, there's a PTSD element to it.
Oh, but there's no question. I mean, I do think there's this, because Chris and I talked about this a little bit last week. What, there's like a fine line between injury luck or bad injury luck and being injury prone.
There's a total difference between injury prone and
it's like, are we
bad injury luck? Oh, I don't think a team can be injury prone.
No, I think you're right. I agree. I think players are. Yeah.
I think players can be injury prone either in the way they are personally constructed, like something about their physiology.
Sure.
Or whatever.
If style of play.
Or style of play. It's either the way they are constructed or the way they play the game can make them injury prone. But then there's other injuries that are just like, come on, man. What do you expect there?
That was,
but if a big
luck.
Man has a foot injury, you can think, well, maybe it's because he's a big man. Like, that's other times it's just horrible luck. So, so I don't know. Is Ja injury prone?
I think he comes into the more of style of play.
It's style of play.
It's like a combination of style of play with being undersized.
And then in stuff that I mean, I guess people are curious about the new coaching staff, but I don't think you're going to get any real answers about, you know, who designed what or who came up with what today. You'll get some clues as to what the lingo is going to be, and that's fine, but I hate the lingo anyway. You know,
yeah, the,
it's just,
yeah.
It's just
feels very corporate. It feels
It feels very Budworthy. And so then there's the Marcus Smart stuff. And by the way, I'm not. I brought it up. John Martin told me about it. Truth is then I search Marcus Smart on Twitter, and then you see the conspiracy theories and whatever. It's just conspiracy theories. Marcus Smart is more important than ever for this team right now, because you don't have GG and you don't have Vince Williams. And so he's clearly going to start, and he's clearly play a huge role. And if Memphis couldn't fall in love with him the way that they would for a new player, typically almost any new player except Chandler Parsons, because he wasn't around, and then the team sucked. Like, so there was, you couldn't form that bond, new player, new team, whatever else, because of the circumstances of last year. It could still happen. We could look up in 3 months and this city could be agog, smitten with Marcus Smart and his competitiveness and all of that. And the way that he fits in as a competitive, fierce guy who can guard and brings the energy and brings some of what we used to see, some of the fire, some of the grit and grind. And we could be in love with him, but Memphis is not in love with him yet, but that's nobody's fault. Right, Jeffrey? It's just the way that it played out.
I think it's kind of the developing theme is like, can they really prove last year was just a gap year or just a lost season for all of them?
But yes. Then for Marcus Smart, it's different. Like, we already had fallen in love with Desmond Bane. We'd already fallen in love with Jaren Jackson Jr. We'd already fallen in love with Ja, all of that. And then it's just, but there'd never been a chance to with Marcus Smart. I don't think the fact that I put no stock in any of it. Will it be interesting to hear from Marcus Smart? Yes, actually. I think it will be. How does he sound about the year? We don't hear much from him.
Yeah.
Like, we've heard from Jaren. Jaren was just doing the register to vote thing, mm-hmm. right? And Desmond Bane was, like, packing backpacks or something, and people talked to Desmond Bane, and Ja's been doing his shoe. The Ja-2s are out, so he's been talking. I haven't heard from Marcus Smart in a long time. So I'm interested to hear from Marcus Smart. So that is another element of it. Obviously, throughout the day, if you stay here on 92.9, you will hear more of what is unfolding down there at FedEx Forum. Oh, I did hear. Let's give them a little snippet of the. This is the new Nike commercial. It's not as good without the visuals, I'll be honest. But we'll give you a little snippet of the Ja Morant Nike commercial.
Was that Eric?
What? Was it Eric in the back? I don't know. Did you hear Eric in the back?
I can't tell. I'll tell you,
it's a fine ad. You know what? You know the only thing I didn't like? I didn't like the last line. And when I do, you'll love me more. There's a smugness in that. Might be true. I do think we will love him, but I don't need him to tell me we'll love him more. He didn't write the line. It's just not my favorite line. And when I do, you'll love me more. There's a smugness to that.
Yeah,
it's not his smugness. It's Nike.
Yeah, no, it's Nike doing what they do. I do think that it's important.
It's a gritty ad, and it's the theme. When I get knocked down, I get back up.
I don't know. When I see that, it makes me realize, like, I just want to see the guys on the floor again having some success. It's like, can we just make it fun again?
Well, someone was, he was at St. George's at a pep rally of some type last week, and I saw clips of it, and he was having fun. Like, he looked happy. He was such a breath of fresh air, you know, such a joyous guy, not just to watch play, but the way he interacted with everybody. And I think you're right. Let's just have the fun back. You know, we've had enough distance now, it seems to me, between, although that stupid lawsuit's still ongoing, but we've had enough distance between the drama and everything. So now let's get back to playing basketball. Grizzlies won their, like, they're fun, man. They're fun. They've always put on a great show down there, obviously. And this group of players has the potential to be as much or more fun than any Grizzlies team ever. So starting soon, Zach Kleiman will be walking out and addressing the media, and we will keep you apprised as to what he says. We have not talked much about the NFL, Jeffrey. That is by design. That is by design, as I suffered through last night's beatdown. But, you know, there's another something I've come up with, another little saying. I was scribbling earlier, and see if you think this one's going to catch on.
Okay.
Misery loves company.
That's got a chance.
I think it's got a chance. And as I look around trying to decide who would make me feel better about my Bills, I look first at the New York Jets. I look first at the New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers. Here, Aaron Rodgers was calling out protection yesterday. He did say he sucked too, but he said protection issues, route issues, et cetera, et cetera. That's a team that couldn't put up numbers against Denver. And if you look back at their wins, the Pats and the Titans.
Yep.
Maybe they're not a Super Bowl contender, Jeffrey. Has that ever occurred to you?
Yes, it did. I feel like I've been, I've been here.
You've been there, but a lot of people were picking them.
The thing that's difficult to peg about the Jets is Rodgers does so many things different than what we're used to seeing now in football. Like, it's a lot of sight adjustments. It's more of like football from what we're used to like 10, 15 years ago, but it requires everybody getting on the same page.
Maybe you'd want to come to practice during the offseason.
Or maybe, like, come up with hand signals that everybody knows. I mean, to me, it seems to be that's a huge part of it. Like, he's trying to, like, signal out. And, you know, I feel like every time I watch a Jets game, I see a receiver looking inside and like, having his hands up going, I don't know what route I'm supposed to run. But, I mean, the other thing is, I believe that was a historically bad performance for Bo Nix in a win. Like,
Bo Nix threw for 60 yards, averaged 2.4 yards per pass, which is, yes, a historically low number. The third lowest average yards per attempt by any quarterback with 25 or more passes in a game in history. Yeah. The only two worst outings came in 65 and 63. Now, mind you, Broncos did beat the Bucs. You know, they beat the Bucs.
And beat them bad.
Yeah. So who knows what they are. But Bo Nix, yeah, that was absolutely a disastrous effort.
That game was one of those games that I feel like the only time you saw it on Red Zone was at the end when every other game had ended except for the Vikings and the Packers. And they were just having to try and show, like, they needed games to show.
If you want to feel, misery loves company. There's no misery there. They're 4-0. They're 4-0, but only 17-10 over the Chargers. And again, I don't wish injury on anybody, but if someone has to be injured.
Yeah, Rashee Rice would probably Rashee be at the top
Rice
of the list.
Would be near the top of the list of people who if someone had to be injured. It would be a Chiefs receiver, and it would be Rashee Rice.
Yeah.
Someone had to be. Again, I'm not wishing on it at all.
But there is, like, this weird thing of, like, you watch them, and they don't look right.
And then they win.
But they're 4-0. But I will say this. I felt the same way about the Eagles last year. Like when you'd watch the Eagles, remember when they had their hot start and they were whatever, like 7-8-1, 9-1 or whatever.
Felt like they weren't real. Right, but and then they turned out not to be real.
Right, but when you were watching it, you were like, I know they're winning and I'm not taking away the wins, but it's like something doesn't look right. I feel the same way about the Chiefs. The key difference is you just know you're going to look up in January and they're going to figure something out.
How about the Eagles this year? How you feeling about the Eagles this year?
I mean, they just
misery loves company.
They just feel like they're like on the edge of like train wreck, right?
Yeah, we'll talk more about this tomorrow. There was some brilliance.
I mean, I know they have injuries. I'm not disputing that, but like you've got Sirianni, Hurts talking. We don't know identity, whatnot. It just feels like it's on the brink of being a dumpster fire.
You like the Commanders in that division now? Jaden Daniels, man.
They're 3-1. I mean, I keep watching. Every time I watch the Commanders, it's like, I don't know. Like,
averaging 30.3 points with a rookie quarterback. Unbelievable.
And obviously they had some juice for Kingsbury yesterday, whatnot. But like what they do on offense, it's the classic when you're playing defense against them and you feel like you can't ever get off the field because they just convert everything.
He is more touchdown drives than incompletions.
Yes.
More touchdown drives this year, scoring drives, more scoring drives than incompletions on the season. He is completing 82.1% of his passes. Oh, man. Hey, Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Don't forget, also, Gabe is going to be at Media Day. We'll have live coverage from Media Day as Gabe will be interviewing players. Also, we'll have Norton Hurd in here for Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munn's going to join the program. Also, Gabe, again, will have all the interviews coming up from Media Days during his program as well.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work is Done.